This recording, Ohio 8, is copyright the International Dialects of English Archive. Comma Get Secure is copyright Douglas N. Onaroff, Jill McCullough, and Barbara Somerville.
Well, here's a story for you. Sarah Perry was a veterinary nurse who had been working daily at an old zoo in a deserted district of the territory, so she was very happy to start a new job at a superb private practice in North Square near the Duke Street Tower. That area was much nearer for her and more to her liking. Even so, on her first morning, she felt stressed. She ate a bowl of porridge, checked herself in the mirror, and washed her face in a hurry. Then she put on a plain yellow dress and a fleece jacket, picked up her kit, and headed for work. When she got there, there was a woman with a goose waiting for her. The woman gave Sarah an official letter from the vet. The letter implied that the animal could be suffering from a rare form of foot and mouth disease, which was surprising, because normally you would only expect to see it in a dog or a goat. Sarah was sentimental, so this made her feel sorry for the beautiful bird. And before long, that itchy goose began to strut around the office like a lunatic, which made an unsanitary mess. The goose's owner, Mary Harrison, kept calling Kama Kama, which Sarah thought was an odd choice for a name. Kama was strong and huge, so it would take some force to trap her. But Sarah had a different idea. First, she tried gently stroking the goose's lower back with her palm, then singing a tune to her. Finally, she administered ether. Her efforts were not futile. In no time, the goose began to tire, so Sarah was able to hold on to Kama and give her a relaxing bath. Once Sarah had managed to bathe the goose, she wiped her off with a cloth and laid her on her right side. Then Sarah confirmed the vet's diagnosis. Almost immediately, she remembered an effective treatment that required her to measure out a lot of medicine. Sarah warned that this course of treatment might be expensive, either 5 or 6 times the cost of penicillin. And I can't imagine paying so much, but Miss Harrison, a millionaire lawyer, thought it was a fair price for a cure. I just imagine, like, she tried all these methods and then literally put this goose down with ether, which is like that chemical they use in the 1800s to put like people down. Like, yes, that's their most, you know, it's just the way that it was even phrased. It was just like, oh yeah, that was the most, you know, it was the best explanation, the best thing we could do. So I grew up just outside of the west side, so like a suburb called Lakewood, which is about 6 miles west of the downtown kind of core urban area. And so I grew up in that city and actually kind of lived there for most of my first, I guess, 18 years. We moved a couple times, but always within the same city. And so I went there. I didn't go to the public school. My parents sent me to Catholic school. So I did that for first, like, 8th grade. And then I got a scholarship to a private school in Lakewood. And so I went to there for 4 years. I'm finishing my last year at Case Western. And then I matched already into ophthalmology. So I'm going to head up to Buffalo for the next 3 to 4 years. So it's kind of like matching into any specialty. It's basically, you know, you decide pretty much in July of last year what you kind of want to do. You do this heinous application system where there's one essay, multiple letters of recommendation, sort of your grades, your transcripts, your personal statement, sort of, and it gets packeted and sent out to distinct places that you want to apply to. And then they look at that and send you invitations to interview with them. Then you go out and interview. And then at the end of this whole thing, you kind of decide what places you like out of those you interviewed. And conversely, the programs look at the applicants and say, which ones do we want in our program? And it goes in this magical match system, computer algorithm that kind of makes the fits that work the best. And so basically, you end up going kind of in preference of where you would like to see yourself. Many, many things about it. You know, I can go on about, I love the structure of the eye. I really enjoy like the patient interaction. Where sort of the people are really invested in sort of the idea that sight is precious, and that sort of when you're threatened with the chance or the perspective of losing that sight, and be able to sort of be able to intervene and sort of help is really kind of exciting and kind of rewarding for me. But then other cool things, you know, you get to play with really cool technology. You get to be a little bit of hands-on, a little bit of clinical. You get to sort of follow people long-term. Like you can see people when they're younger and 20 years later still be doing sort of regular checkups and kind of had a little bit of that primary care aspect to it. A couple things, I guess the two big things are people who are slightly like apathetic towards like sort of in the daily day experiences, sort of not being able to pull something from it, not be able to learn from what's going on. I think to kind of go in and expect to either be handed something all the time or to sort of be like, well, this was a useless waste of my time. Because nothing's like a really waste of your time. You know, it's what you put into it, it's what you get out of it. And the second big thing is people who don't use their freaking turn signals before they turn. Like, so, especially, or they, when they do use their signals, but they turn it on the moment they are turning, and so you can't, there's no room for you to go around them, there's no room to navigate. I mean, for me, that seems like very selfish.